This broadcast was recorded prior to the October 6th California Superior Court decision to invalidate a lawsuit seeking to remove the Agricultural Labor Relations Initiative Proposition 22 from the November ballot.
Mr. Chavez, you recently told delegates at the California AFL-CIO convention that your United Farm Workers Union will die if Proposition 22 on the November ballot passes. Now, isn't that more political than practical?
No, it's very practical because Proposition 22 would take the right of workers to strike and to boycott, and that in itself would end the attempts by workers to organize.
From KCBS News Radio, In Depth, a spontaneous and unrehearsed news interview with Cesar Chavez, head of the United Farm Workers. Mr. Chavez will be questioned by KCBS newsmen Barry Simmons and Larry Cooper and KCBS newswoman Sharon Lovejoy. Now, to continue the questioning, here's Barry Simmons.
Expanding more on your answer to the first question, Mr. Chavez, you are saying either you win in November or your union goes down to defeat as a result of Proposition 22.
Yes, we say that because the organizing farm workers is quite a different thing as organizing other workers. And our experience now for 10 years in trying to organize workers is that without the help of the consumer, without the help of the people in the cities, our union could not hope to exist. There are too many forces against us. In the rural areas in agriculture today, we have the mess of the county governments, the courts, the sheriff, the police. We have the accessibility of the illegal entrant, the importation of wetbacks from across the border to break our strikes. All those things are combined to destroy our union. We could not possibly organize unless we have the right to go to the cities and incorporate the help of the people in the large population centers.
Well, then, who is on your side?
Well, the farm worker who wants to organize because he knows of the advantages and the benefits of unionism from his friends and from his acquaintances and from what he can see and read of other workers organized in the cities. We have very few people other than that in the rural areas that are for us. And then in the cities, we have, of course, the church, the students, the labor unions, The liberal elements in the community, and many of the plain middle class people who see that there is a great injustice committed against these workers, and who want to help us.
Where was the United Farm Workers before this? It seems like an assault began on Proposition 22 with Jerry Brown first coming out saying that it appeared several signatures have been collected fraudulently, and that. Where was the UFW when the signature gathering began for Proposition 22?
See, we had to make a decision. The decision was either to attack the collection of signatures then or to wait. Our decision was not to attack the collection of signatures because we thought that would not be proper. Let those who want to sign, and then we'll decide in the election. We got worried when the LA Times, one of the reporters, ran the first article about a possible fraud. At that point, we became worried, and we began to investigate.
Sharon Lovejoy.
I recently talked to some people who live in Porterville who are quite bitter about the problems that have resulted from the negotiations UFW has been trying to undergo, first with the grapes, then with the lettuce. They say there's a lot of violence in that area, that there's a lot of violence that can be directly attributed to the union, and that many of the farmers who had agreed to go along with the union are losing workers to picket lines now and cannot get their work done. What is your side to this story?
First of all, there's no violence. If there were violence, then things wouldn't be as what they are today, you know. That's a charge that the opposition levels at us because they know that one of the reasons we get tremendous support from the cities is because of our nonviolent stance. Secondly, the present strike at the White River Farms, which is owned by Butte Gas and Oil, we think is an attempt by the Farm Bureau, the Federation of Farm Bureaus, the National Right to Work Committee, and other assorted groups of the extreme right elements to piggyback that strike into the 22 proposition and the whole campaign on it, because we've had a contract there for 6 years, and we broke over language that we've had there for 6 years. And we gave the company from 20 to 30 cents less than the other people, than the other ranch that we have under contract, for the purpose of trying to get a contract with them because they were refusing. When we did that, then they said, well, now that we can work, get together on wages, now we've got this language. Obviously, they didn't want to negotiate. And today, we're asking on the company, we've been calling the company through third parties to sit down and negotiate with us. We made a request of the Bishop's Committee on Farm Labor, asked them to call the company, and they were willing to meet at a moment's notice so we can resolve the question, the matter, and they refused to meet. So it isn't the union who doesn't want to meet. It's the other side who we think is part of the campaign on 22.
You mentioned the Bishop's Committee and several organizations. You say that you have religious backing. To me, as an outsider, it seems that many of your boycotts and rallies take on the trappings almost of a religious movement. And to me, this seems to be more of a play on the emotions of the people than really constructive organizing. What do you say to that?
Because you don't understand the traditions and the culture of our people. You say that, but if you were to be a Chicano or a Filipino, as an example, you would readily understand that religion is very much a part of our lives. And it's not a gimmick. We believe in it. It's part of it, and it takes a more significant part because of our dedication to nonviolence.
But are Chicanos and Filipinos the majority of the people engaged in farm labor work throughout the United States?
In this area, they are, yes. And in the areas where they're not, we have the black, who also has a tradition, a long tradition of religion. And everyone, we deal with people who are not assimilated into your society, as an example. Mm-hmm. And those, they don't see these things as foreign. For instance, the Arabs, we have Arabs in the union, and fasting, we fasted with them 2 or 3 days just for the purpose of the continuation of a struggle. And they understand fasting readily. That's part of their life, part of their culture. So we're not doing anything strange or different, you know.
Mr. Chavez, I just wanted to ask one question. When you were speaking to Hastings College of Law the other day, you mentioned that your prayer meetings that you'd been holding were many times a step to keep the people calm so that they wouldn't become violent when they ran up against opposition. Has this been a traditional part of what you're doing?
Yes, see, because question of nonviolence and strikes is the most difficult thing. And if you go through the labor history of this country and other countries, and there's been an awful lot of violence in organizing. And we have been relatively free of that. Sure, there's times when people start throwing stones and clods and so forth, but basically we've been very nonviolent. And it's a job of the leadership to do that. And in such times as last Monday, when the passions flare, when people get very upset because they see the federal government joining with the local growers to break a strike, they get very upset. And it was at that time that Dolores Huerta called all the workers together for a prayer meeting. And it was at the prayer meeting that there were more than three together, there were about 200, that they were arrested.
Mr. Chavez, how much backing and support and blessing are you getting from the Catholic Church? Now, I don't mean small churches in the San Joaquin Valley. I'm talking about the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church in California. Do you enjoy any support from them?
Well, we have just recently, the Catholic bishops of California a week ago Sunday came out with a statement on No on 22, and their statement was that it was totally unfair, and that upon examination by their attorneys and by themselves, they found Proposition 22 to be totally inadequate to do the job that the proponents of 22 claim it's going to do.
Do you receive any financial help from the church?
No, we don't. We've never received financial help from the hierarchy of the church. We receive financial help from priests and congregations and Catholics, but not officially from the bishops or from the church itself.
Larry?
You mentioned the religious significance of what you do and not understanding the background of many of the members of the United Farm Workers. Actually, to me, and I think to a majority of the public, the middle-class public, upper-class, and probably to a greater extent the lower class, does not really understand what the United Farm Workers is. Now, as I understand the United Farm Workers, it's an organization that insists on a closed shop instead of going to the worker himself to see if he wants to belong to the union. I don't know of what benefits a worker gets if he joins the United Farm Workers. Does he get the things that we think of typically in a union, such as hospitalization and pension benefits and so forth and so on? Let me ask you a couple of questions here. First of all, the closed shop concept. Why, it's been said that the United Farm Workers refuses to go to the workers themselves for a secret ballot to see if they want to be represented. Why is this?
Well, it's not so in the first place. We don't have a closed shop in our union. That's a story that's propagated by the employers. We don't have a closed shop in the union. We go to the workers. We get the support from the workers. Imagine trying to organize workers without their support. It would be impossible. The reason that we've been able to get as far as we have is because we do have the overwhelming and the fantastic support of the workers in agriculture, not only in California but throughout the country. And furthermore, we're not opposed to elections, to secret ballot elections. We want them. But we're not going to submit to elections when the other side makes all the rules, like in 22, and we have no benefits. For instance, in Proposition 22, if a worker declares for the union, he can be fired, and there's no way to appeal that firing. He has no rights as a worker. And so what we're saying is that the employer really is looking upon the propaganda that we resist secret ballot elections because it's a good propaganda scheme. In fact, we welcome them. In fact, we've had many of them. We've had the 400 contracts or so, we've had maybe almost 80 or 90 elections, and we haven't lost, with the exception of one, we haven't lost a single election. And that election was lost because a day prior to the election, the employer came in and offered the workers a 35% raise if they voted against the union, which is illegal under the National Labor Relations Act. Mm-hmm. And we got that turned around. But see, you have to understand is that one of the reasons the workers want to organize is because the world has shrunk to the point that they know, for instance, a couple of weeks ago, the farm workers in Italy had a tremendous victory. There was news all over the farm worker community in California and throughout the country. They know when a carpenter gets a wage increase and how much he's getting, and when a bricklayer and see, that is, and because there's such a small number of the total workforce that is not organized yet or doesn't have those benefits, they understand, see, because they see what unions do for other people, so they do want the union.
All right. What say I become a member of United Farm Workers, what benefits do I receive other than having the mass negotiating abilities?
Well, you see, first of all, our movement is an economic movement. It's a union. The employers want to make it something else, but it's a union, and there you have a contract, and the worker gets the benefits that are negotiated on those contracts for better wages and better working conditions and a very stringent policy on the use of pesticides. And, for instance, in all of our contracts, we insist that there be toilet facilities for men and separate for women. In places like in Salinas and other lettuce-producing areas where they are not under contract, the workers are still urinating on lettuce because there's no place to go. There's not a proper sanitary facility. And then, besides that, we're involved in a lot of other programs. For instance, we are now developing a medical clinic program for our people. And we have built two clinics, and we're prepared to build three more. And the only reason we're not building faster is because we can't get enough. We can't attract doctors to go to the rural areas. Then we have a retirement program. In other words, retirement villages, a concept of the old people who have no place to go, no families. They were brought here like braceros and like the old Filipinos by themselves and like the Arabs are coming who never had a chance to marry, don't have any family. We don't want them abandoned. We don't want them to be thrown in a junk pile. We then built those retirement centers. We're beginning with the first one in Delano, right close to our headquarters. And our staff and our members are in close proximity and with the urging from us to stop by and say hello to those people and keep them in their old age, keep them knowing and feeling that they belong to part of our movement. Then, of course, we're involving cooperative development. An awful lot of voter. We've got a bigger voter registration drive in California now than anybody. We have 250 full-time volunteers registering voters in California. We have 110 full-time volunteers registering voters in Arizona, and altogether over 1,000 people registering voters. So we're into all that kind of work.
Mr. Chavez, isn't it a fact that you and the Teamsters Union are locked in a war over union representation for farm workers in California?
No, we're not. See, back in 1966, the Teamsters came in and tried to, in fact, sign a contract behind our picket lines. And what we did, we took that company and put a 10-month boycott on them. And at the end, we were able to get the company to return to the negotiating table with us. We got the Teamsters and the company to agree to do away with that sweetheart contract that was signed behind our picket lines. And then we had relative peace with them for about 2-3 years. And in 1970, in the lettuce strike in Salinas, when we asked the lettuce industry to recognize our union and propose to them that there should be elections and propose to them that Governor Reagan should be the one to conduct the elections, all we asked in return was that our people not be fired if they declare for the union, and that we have the right to access to the workers where they live in the camps. Well, not only did we not get the election because the growers refused, they wouldn't even talk to us, but they organized a committee of growers to go to the Teamsters and beg the Teamsters to come in, and they began to sign a contract with the Teamsters for those workers. When the workers found out, we took all the workers out on strike. That was why Salinas started in that way.
You are listening to an interview with Cesar Chavez, head of the United Farm Workers Union. I'm Barry Simmons, and with me are Sharon Lovejoy and Larry Cooper. Mr. Chavez, what happens if Proposition 22 passes? What happens to you? What happens to your farm movement in this state?
If it passes, see, Proposition 22 is just a part of a national campaign by the American Farm Bureau. They have a similar law now enacted through the legislature in Kansas. They have one in Idaho, and they have one in Arizona. They could not get this law through the federal government because it's so ridiculous it wouldn't pass. They tried it 3 times in Sacramento, and it failed to pass because it's unconstitutional. So we're now testing the constitutionality of the acts in those 3 states. We have a recall movement against the governor of Arizona. We needed 103,000 signatures. We now have about 110,000 signatures. There's going to be a recall movement there sometime after November. We are in the courts to try and get Proposition 22 taken off the ballot. If it should pass, and we doubt it very much, if it stays on the ballot, and it may very well stay on the ballot, we're asking the people to vote against it. We feel confident that the voter in California, not necessarily for us or against us, would be very much against 22 if they could find out what's behind it.
But if it passes, this would be a major setback.
It will be a major
setback. All that you've done up to this point.
It will be a major setback. It means that the feeble attempts of workers to organize and have a better life for themselves and for their families is going to be, if not completely destroyed, it sure as heck is going to be retarded, you know, indefinitely.
Well, I find that hard to believe it would destroy you. You as a person, wouldn't you just keep fighting?
Oh, no, not me as a person.
Well, I mean, your union, your movement.
Oh, the movement would be very... See, because if we're having... Imagine what would happen to the carpenters or to the Teamsters or to the other workers if tomorrow the law said you can't strike. What would that be? They'd be destroyed in the same sense that we would.
Larry?
Well, then... How long do you think it's going to be before the federal government includes farm workers in the national labor relations?
It's going to happen until our union and the labor movement supports us and the growers can get together and agree on some legislation. See, 22, as well as the few proposals that have been submitted in the National Congress, is the worst of the positions of the growers. 22 is so bad because in order to keep the farm interest organized, they had to take the worst of all the positions of that industry, and so they came up with 22. And with things like 22, we could never get together.
Your enemies have said, and of course, an enemy to the UFW would say something like this: that the unionization of agricultural workers will, in effect, ruin the agriculture movement in the United States. Many feel that if you go in and unionize a people, that the growers will simply move to a crop that requires less labor, or they'll move to mechanization, or simply give it up and go into something else. your answer to these charges?
Well, no, that's just smokescreen, and the growers try very hard to frighten the consumer, which cares really doesn't care about that, because, see, what happens is that they can't bring machines to everything, because take the tomatoes as an example. The tomatoes picked by machines are so horrible, they're red, but they taste like alfalfa. So now they have problems because people, you and I, and even though we may not know them, when we get a good tomato, and so, gee, this really tastes like an old-fashioned tomato, in all probability that tomato came from Mexico. So the tomato industry here is in trouble because the consumer wants a tomato, the old-fashioned tomato picked by hand, because it retains the flavor and all of the characteristics of the tomato. As far as going from one crop to the other, no, the demand is there. The demand is there for grapes. The demand is there for melons. The demand is there for lettuce. They're not going to move out because that's where they're making the money. And as far as just giving up the business, they're not. It's a very profitable business for everyone except the farm workers. So they're going to keep at it because they're making money.
What about Cesar Chavez? Since you began this movement, you've become a quite a potent political force in the United States. The candidates come to you and ask for your blessings. They don't wait for you to give your blessings to them.
It's really, I don't think that it's really that we're powerful, because I think we're not powerful. I think what happens is that the justice of our cause is so overwhelming that people of goodwill seek us and want to help us, because at this point we're so much of an underdog and our cause is so just that they can't resist but want to help us.
Can you really say that? You think you're not that much of a political force?
I've never considered ourselves to be that powerful. And it'd be a mistake if to think that we're that powerful, because the way that things happen is today we're very much in the news, tomorrow we will not be in the news. Once the problems of farm workers are resolved, we will be forgotten and we'll be left alone so we can do our work.
Apparently the employers think you're a powerful force.
We think the same thing of them, and we can prove it because they've kept farm workers from getting legislation. You know, farm workers today don't have in California unemployment insurance, as an example. And they have the power. We're taking a little bit of their power, and of course they don't like that.
Sharon?
Mr. Chavez, what is the feeling of the rank-and-file union member about Proposition 22? Does it make them a bit afraid to see some of the organizing strength of any union chipped away, as you say this would?
Oh, it is. See, we just completed a three-week tour through the organized areas and the unorganized areas. And to give you an example how excited they are, I mean, how frightened they are, in the organized areas, in Delano, we had a rally. We had 8,000 farm workers out to the rally. That means almost 100% of the organized workers had a rally in Salinas last week. We had about 6,000, almost 100% of the workforce, had a rally in Fresno Sunday. Last Sunday, we had about 4,000. And then other rallies, smaller rallies in other areas. The organized farm worker, about 58,000 in the state, is very, very concerned. They know what can happen. See, all of a sudden, they discover that having a union is really heaven. You know, it's really different, and they're very concerned. So much so that we've gotten commitments from hundreds of them to come to the cities, and they'll be in San Francisco and Oakland and San Jose and Sacramento and Stockton, San Diego, Los Angeles, in large numbers, making the appeal directly to the voters to vote no on 22.
Well, what about other union members of other unions, ILWB, things like that?
Oh, yes. The FLCIO, the federation that encompasses all the FLCIO unions in the state at the convention at the beginning of the month, voted against 22, also set up a special committee and a fundraising event to raise money to help us fight 22. The Teamsters are together with us on this because they're also concerned. The ILWU, which has been a faithful supporter of our movement and was the first union to support us, together with the UAW, are very concerned and want to also be helpful.
What is the state of health of Cesar Chavez today as we talk? You have put your health in jeopardy on several occasions by fasting in a protest over what you consider the injustices of the farm worker today. Are you in good health?
Yes, that question comes back also to the whole question of religion and fasting. Fasting is not jeopardizing oneself. Fasting can be a very beneficial thing spiritually and also physically. I'm in very great shape. I control my weight. I have a very good diet. And, of course, if we fast 24 days, 25 days, I need a couple of weeks to get my strength back. But at the end of the fast, I had a complete and total examination by a group of physicians who declared that my heart and lungs and the vital organs were as strong as a 17-year-old boy. I'm 45 years old, so I feel very good about that.
You want to pass that diet along to a couple of us.
Mr. Chavez, do you fear for your life at any time?
You see, there are occasionally telephone calls and letters sent in about my physical safety. And one cannot but have to think about these things occasionally. But, you know, when you're so busy and doing what you want to do and so in love with the movement, there's very little time to really think and be afraid of what the consequences might be. We know one thing. We know that we live from day to day, and we live each day as fully as we can, and we try to make as big a contribution as we possibly can. And we know that we're not going to die before our time. We're not going to be scared out of doing our job.
Is there any sort of a power struggle between you and other members of the hierarchy of the United Farm Workers Union?
No, thanks God. In that respect, we have a tremendous solidarity, because you see, we're so far, we've been so worried and concerned about the opposition that we have no time to fight among ourselves. Someday, when the union's built, then maybe that'll happen. If that happens, then I leave.
Larry.
I was very impressed by what you said about some of the benefits that the union has planned, the retirement village, the other things. But I can't help but thinking one of the biggest problems of farm workers in the past and currently has been the fact that they are migratory by necessity. Is the United Farm Workers doing anything to help the farm worker become a permanent resident of any area, or is that impossible?
No, it can be done, but we would have to organize all of the workforce. What we have now in the Shenley, in the White River Farms, where we had a contract for 6 years, we found some interesting things on a survey for ourselves. We found, number one, that they had the best wages of any farm worker in the state. We found that in 1966, when we signed that contract, 95% of the families live in company housing in camps. Today, there are no people living in camps. They all have their homes or they rent places. We found 68% of the families in 6 years have either built their homes or bought their homes. And we also found that when we signed the contract, the average attendance of the kids of those workers was the ninth grade. Today, we find out that the best percentage of in the 6 years are now going through the full 4 years of high school. We're proud of that.
Sharon, a brief question.
I just wonder, are you optimistic about the failure of Proposition 22 at this time? Does it look good?
It looks good. Of course, the opposition hasn't come. We say that that they have three great obstacles to go through, three hurdles. One is the hearing on the 6th of October with the Secretary of State, then the election on November the 7th, and then if it passes on November the 8th, we go to the Supreme Court with it. We're confident that we're getting our message out.
Thank you, Cesar Chavez, for being our guest today on In Depth.
Today, our guest on In Depth was Cesar Chavez, head of the United Farm Workers. We invite you to join us next week at this time for another look behind the headlines on In Depth.